Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork, the podcast about DIY living. I would call it eclectic how-to. We talk about cool stuff, could be cooking, gardening, homesteading, beekeeping, computer geek stuff. And today we're going to be talking about woodworking and making stuff in general with Lynn from a website and YouTube channel called Darben Orvar. I ran across Lynn's YouTube channel while watching some other YouTube videos, and I was really kind of attracted to the what I would call kind of a European simplicity to her designs and her work. And I also just thought she was a really great video host as well, showing you how to build some stuff that is pretty complicated. And the clincher for me was her simple and easy approach to actually finishing wood projects. And we'll talk about that with her a little bit. But I always choke when it comes time to putting on the stain or the wax or the polyurethane. And she makes it look effortless. And I think it, you know, I kind of was inspired by that to be better at staining things. So anyway, here we go with Lynn from Darben Orvar. So Lynn, you have a YouTube channel called Darben Orvar, and I love that name. it just, as soon as I found it once on YouTube, it stuck in my head. And I was curious, I know how you got that name, but I'm sure people are wondering how that came about.
Yes, it is a little bit different, I'll give you that. Well, my name is Lynn, and when I was looking to create a YouTube channel, I didn't want to use my personal name. I wanted something a little different, something that was unique. So my dog's name, I have a 3-year-old golden retriever. His name is Darwin. And we always kind of play around with names. Me and my husband, we kind of play around with nicknames, and his name turned into Darben from Darwin, and then that kind of turned into Darben Orvar for some weird reason, and then that we kind of started calling him Darben Orvar. And then when I was about to create the YouTube channel, I was thinking, okay, what is a cool name? What is a little different? And then Darwin was sitting right next to me, and I was like, hey, Mr. Darben Orvar, you know, that's not a bad name. Maybe I'll go with Darben Orvar. So that's the name of my YouTube channel. So yeah. That's the story of that.
It sticks in my head. It works really well, I thought.
Yeah.
And how did you come about to create a YouTube channel?
Well, I've always been making things and doing things, and I was really getting into YouTube around that time period, about a year and a half now, and watching a lot of channels, a lot of videos, and I just loved it. I just loved that there was so much creativity there, so much energy, and there's so many people sharing what they were doing. And at the same time, I was just doing a lot of things myself. So I just thought it would be an awesome, you know, opportunity to kind of share that with other people and kind of make videos about that. I was kind of playing with making videos separately, but I hadn't found at that point like a subject to create videos about. And if you don't have a subject, it's kind of hard to kind of practice and play. You really need something to do it about. So then I was thinking, well, why don't I just kind of record what I'm doing and maybe, you know, sharing and maybe meet some new people. And then it kind of just got rolling from there. So that's how that started.
I had the same thing where I was always that guy that emailed you way too many links to cool stuff.
Really?
And then I worked in television, and me and some friends tried to have our own TV show, mm-hmm. and that didn't work. And then I discovered, you know, YouTube and that, and I was like, oh, here we are, you know?
Yeah. No, I just think it's so cool that there are people from all over the world and they're all doing stuff. And there's this almost like this friendly competition in that sense, that you're seeing someone else do something and then you get an idea from that and then you want to maybe modify it or do your own version. And then it just kind of builds and builds. And then there's such a great community as well on YouTube. And especially I'm more in the woodworking maker area, and there's an awesome community around there and so many people who are, you know, commenting and talking with each other, and I just love that. I just love that it's such an energetic area. So I just thought it would be awesome to be a part of that, and it's just so much fun. I mean, you just can't beat it. It's just awesome.
Yeah, a lot of my stuff is very derivative. Like, I'll just see a project somebody made, and I'll make it, and I always attribute them. But like my, mm-hmm. I built a maple syrup evaporator out of a filing cabinet.
Oh, that's quite inventive.
It's great. And I got the idea from a gentleman who works at a historic farm in Indiana. And I did some improvements to it, but it just, I don't know if I would ever come up with the idea myself, and without the internet, I probably would have never come up with the idea. But I find a lot of interesting ideas on Flickr, of all places.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I just kind of type in an idea, and I see what kind of pictures come up, and I'm like, oh, we'll work on that kind of thing.
Well, that's also one of my favorite things when I make a video, and I do a lot of very instructive videos with like how to and steps on how to build something. And I just love it when people take those instructions or that idea and then they build their own version and then they send me pictures of them. Like a couple of videos back, I made a crosscut sled for the table saw.
I saw that, yeah.
And then a jig to go with that so you can make box joints. And I've been getting a lot of people sending me pictures when they have been making their own version, or they've been following, mostly have they been following the instructions, but I just love that people are doing that. It's so awesome. It's so cool that you can just take someone else's idea and then maybe tinker it a little bit to fit your needs more, or just you do what they did. Yeah, I think that's so cool.
I have a biscuit joiner. That's the closest I get to that kind of thing.
Aha, uh-huh, yeah.
It was a hand-me-down.
Are you using it?
I made a screen door with it, and it worked out really well. And then I tried to make a door for my greenhouse, and I don't know what I did wrong, but in about 6 months, the door fell apart, and the biscuits just fell right out. So I'm trying to figure out what I did wrong there. But you know, we learn. Woodworking
well,
is not...
Is kind of...
Yeah, I'm not expert at woodworking, but I'm getting better at it. So you're my inspiration here.
Thank you. Well, it's just such a, you know, it's the whole idea. I like that you kind of, you get better as you do more and you figure things out. And it's a really fun hobby and thing to do in that sense. That is practical, you know, but it's fun at the same time. And you learn more.
You built a really nice stool the other day with some beautiful cuts, just these angle cuts that I was like, wow, that was pretty amazing. And you made it seem... it came out kind of flawless and the video flowed really nicely. And was that something you kind of came up with in your head, or do you sketch things out, or how does that thought process work?
Well, usually there's a need for something where I need a specific thing, and then I usually go from there. I'm not sure what you were referring to just now, a stool?
Was it a collaboration you did with another...
Oh,
maker?
Okay, way back. Okay, you're talking way back.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just like, I haven't made a stool lately. But yeah, well, something like that. Actually, I really needed a step stool a while back and for the shop, because I'm hanging things quite up high and then I need to reach them. I try to really maximize my wall space so I can really hang things really high up. And usually then it kind of comes out of a need where you're like, okay, this is what I need. And then you're thinking, okay, what kind of wood do I have to work with? Do I want to make this like a nice kind of traditional, you know, stool with some interesting joinery, or do you want to go the kind of the simple route and can maybe use pocket screws and plywood or something like that? So I usually just kind of work from what I have, like the need comes first, and then I think about what materials I have to work with, and I kind of go from there. And usually I just use pen and paper to kind of do sketches and things like that. I like doing that, kind of take my time with the design idea.
You actually, one of your podcast episodes was about organization in the shop, I remember.
Yes, yeah. The Darwin Orva podcast, which I started with my husband, basically because the you know, you do these videos and you really get to the point with an idea, but then there's so many things that you want to talk about that may not really fit in the video format. So then the podcast is really nice to have as a format where you can be a little bit more relaxed. And I had just done, when we started the podcast, I had just finished a video making a French wall cleat. Or French cleat system on a wall in the shop, and done a lot of organizing system. And I just realized that there is a huge, you know, people love organizing things. I love organizing things, but I was kind of surprised by the response by that video, because there's something that people just love, the idea of organizing things. So there were so many thoughts about it from that video. And then that way it just really became a good topic for a podcast to kind of get out all those ideas, which maybe you, you know, couldn't really get out in the video. So...
I'm always trying to get people to start their own video channel or their own podcasts. And you recently started your iTunes podcast. I was just wondering if you had any advice for people that are thinking about starting, and what you ran into that was a challenge, and what was hard and what was easy about it.
Well, I guess when you do a podcast, I guess fundamentally you need something to talk about.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, I listen to quite a few podcasts in general, and I always like the ones that have more of a topic or that are focused in some way around a subject. Like, it can be fun to listen to podcasts that are like about anything and everything, especially if you really like the people. But in general, I find that it's nice to kind of know what to expect. So so far, when we've been recording the podcast, we've kind of picked a subject, and sometimes, you know, I write like a blog post ahead of time to kind of, or afterwards, depending on how it goes, but like to really focus my thoughts about it and kind of, yeah, really have each podcast be about something rather specific, so you don't go like all over the place. Although that's a different kind of podcast, really. I mean, there is a place for that as well.
So you're saying there's a place for Garden Fork? So.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying that you have on your many of your episodes, you have a specific subject as well.
Right.
You know, about
yeah.
a particular topic. So no, absolutely. I'm just saying that when you do one episode and it's all you go into 20 different areas, then that can be confusing. But when you have you know, when you pick a couple of subjects around in one episode, I think that is maybe preferable.
I'm trying
so
to.
So there's definitely a place for your podcast. Yes.
I'm trying to get better at it. I just did one with my friend Erin, and I actually emailed her and I said, "Well, what do you want to talk about?" She goes, "I want to talk about letter writing."
I listened to that one. That was very interesting.
And it's not really a Garden Forky yet thing, but I was like, "Oh, let's talk about that." And it really kind of.
It's an interesting subject, absolutely.
So I want to do more letter writing. So that was my that was my takeaway from that.
Lost art.
Hey everyone, I'm wondering if you would consider becoming a monthly supporter of Garden Fork Radio and GardenFork.tv. We've made it really easy to do so. We've started a Patreon campaign. And you choose a dollar amount every month that you would like to contribute to Garden Fork. The suggested dollar amount is $3 a month. That's less than a dollar a show, a buck a show, as Rick calls it. It's about $36 a year. So that's like a magazine subscription, basically, is how I think about it. If you're interested, there's a link in the show notes here. If you're listening on an iPhone in the podcast app, just tap on the Garden Fork Radio logo of this episode. And it will show the show notes, and there's a link in there. Or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. That's patreon.com/gardenfork. There's also a link on every page of our website. If you consider that, that would be really cool. Appreciate that. You can also support Garden Fork by using our Amazon shopping link, which is on our website. You can also go to gardenfork.tv/Amazon, and that, if the technology is working, should take you to Amazon as well. All right? Thank you. Another thing I like about your YouTube channel is when you're done making something out of wood, you show people how to finish it. And a lot of times I've seen videos or tutorials and they're like, well, and then just go and finish it. But you actually walk people through it. And that's the point where I choke. I can build things out of wood, but then the part where I actually have to put some sort of stain on it or a varnish or a wax, I freeze up.
Yeah. I think that's a very common experience in general, where people are almost a bit intimidated by the finishing process. And I think the finishing process is really awesome and really fun because it really enables you to make it more yours, to custom make it, you know, to give it a specific look or feel or whatever it is that you're going for. So I think it's just a really awesome area that may be a little neglected at some points, which is why I really enjoy talking about it and showing it in my videos.
Was there one recently where you put a polyurethane finish on and then you put some other sealer on top of the polyurethane?
I'm not sure what you're referring to exactly, but I often do put like a polyurethane finish on, and then I usually finish it with like a wax polish on top of that. That is what I often do. I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to
exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Yeah. I was curious about that because I always thought that polyurethane was the top coat, and then you put something else on there, and I was like, oh, neat. I wonder what that is.
Well, I think polyurethane gives a specific feel, and it can be rather glossy.
Yeah.
And often I think I like to cut that gloss level down a little bit sometimes by adding a wax coat, but also because I think it adds such a nice feel. If you add a little wax, you can either – sometimes I like to put it on with some steel wool, some really fine steel wool, and because then you really do like a super fine sanding with that wax, and it takes away any kind of bump or any imperfections in the finish. I mean, I don't know if you've ever done like a lot of, you know, you finish a large piece and then there can be a little bit of dust in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then as it's drying, you get these little imperfections in the finish. And I found that, you know, in addition that you try to have a pretty clean room when you finish, which isn't always possible, but ideal. But other than that, I like to just, like, if you do that little final finish with wax, and then after you put it on, you kind of buff it out, then you're going to get that super, super smooth finish. Which I just, it just feels nice. So it's just nice from that point of view. Plus, it can cut the gloss level if that's something that you're looking for.
We recently moved into a home, and the guy before us just had refinished the wood floors, and he put this super high gloss polyurethane on it.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of awful, but a couple of weeks of the dogs running all over that took care of that real quick. So.
That can be slippery too if it's too shiny on the floor. Yeah.
The wax you're talking about, do you make? I watched one episode where you actually melted down honeycomb into beeswax mm-hmm. and made some finishes.
Yeah, it was actually another YouTuber, John Peterson. He lives in New York or in New Jersey, and he has his own bees, which I don't. But he sent me some honeycomb. And so I boiled that in water and basically filtered out the wax and then used that to make my wax polish. And it was actually a really fun experience. Have you ever done that? Have you ever?
I actually have a video coming out showing how to boil down your comb with a rice cooker.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I use a slow cooker. I have a slow cooker in my shop.
All right.
Well, actually, not for this video. I actually have a slow cooker where I have my wax. But with the one I'm talking, I just used a pot of water for that. That's right. I'm just trying to remember now. But yeah, it is. It was really fun to do.
And then did you add some, you cut the beeswax with a linseed oil or something to make a finish?
Yeah, I make a wax polish that I use all the time that I also sell in my shop. But it's something that I just love doing. I love it myself. So I just, you know, always put it on. And I think that you really need to cut it, because if you don't, it's way too hard. Yep. You know, it's so hard. And it's surprising how much oil you really need in, or you can use, you know, mineral spirits or something like that too. But I really prefer oil for most things. So I usually do 4 parts oil to 1 part wax.
I could see how that would work. So could you walk us through, okay, we've made this, let's say we've made a stool like you did. How would we go about finishing it with a stain and a sealer?
Okay, well, first of all, put the stain on. Don't want to put anything. Although it depends. Okay, let's say you have a piece of wood and it's something nice that you want to show off. So I would probably start with a wash coat first, depending on how strong of a stain you want. Mm-hmm. Because if you put a wash coat on, like a de-waxed shellac, and you can thin that out a little bit too, then the stain won't be quite as blotchy. For some woods, the stain gets a little blotchy. So that's a step you can take first if you want to go to that extent.
Is that kind of like a primer coat?
It kind of is, yeah. It just makes sure that the stain goes on more evenly, and it also makes sure that the stain doesn't go on too dark. Mm-hmm. If you don't want the stain to go like at maybe super dark, you can start with a seal coat of shellac, a de-waxed shellac first, and then put the stain after that. But that's kind of an optional step. You don't have to do that. But yeah, I would put the stain on and then make sure that has dried fully, and then you have lots of options when it comes to the top coat after that. You could, you know, of course, do polyurethane. Other option is, like, you can use shellac on top of that as a finish, you know. Mm-hmm. That is also a nice idea, or lacquer, spray lacquer. Lots of people use that. So yeah, basically pick one. Could be polyurethane, and then do a couple of coats. Let me make sure it dries in between, and maybe a little fine sanding in between as well is always nice. And then if I do a couple of coats of polyurethane, I really like to give it a couple of days to dry before I do anything other than that, because you know sometimes that can actually, I actually did a video early on where I put on 40 coats of polyurethane on a piece of wood just for an experiment. Yeah, and it takes a long time to completely dry. So if you're making a stool or something and you want to put on some polyurethane, I would, you know, if you want to put on like maybe 3 coats or something, just make sure you give it a couple of days after that so it's completely dry. And then, you know, I like to finish it with a little steel wool or just a cloth and wax and kind of put that on and then kind of buff that out. And if you do that, you'll have a really nice finish.
You know, the part that I always choke on is how long I have the stain in a can and I've mixed it up and I have like a piece of cheesecloth or a piece of t-shirt and I rub the stain onto the wood, or I kind of mush it on or whatever the word is. I don't know how long I'm supposed to leave the stain on before I wipe the excess stain off again.
Oh, well, there are lots of different ways of doing that. I actually usually don't do it that way. I usually put on a little bit less stain ahead of time and I just kind of, you know, rub it in and then kind of remove as I go.
All right.
I know that the manufacturers, most cans say, put on all the, you know, put
does,
on a ton of stain. Well, I think that may be an inside marketing move from the stain
use more
people.
Stain.
It might be. I mean, many people do that and you can get good results from that. But I found that it's just as easy to just put on a little less stain and kind of rub it in as you go and get really good results, because then you don't have to take that second step and wipe it off later on.
Oh, good to know. I have two wood pine doors that I have to stain, and I've been putting it off for like 9 months now because I'm like, oh, that's a big job, I'm going to mess up. So, all right, that's good to know.
Yeah.
The other cool thing I like about your show, and I thought this a little unusual, but then it made sense to me, is you have an indoor shop, which is beautiful, and then you have an outdoor shop, and most of your power tools are outside.
Yes. It is ideal most times.
It keeps the sawdust out of the shop, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I actually built the main shop a couple of years ago now, and it is pretty small. It is 12 by 16. And when I was first planning on, what I wanted to put in inside of it, I was planning first on putting in the table saw and a few power tools. And then as I kind of started playing around with that concept more, I just realized that there's so much dust accumulating and it's a small space. And I really wanted to keep the shop nice, like a place where you really want to come out and where you really want to work, and not where it's a dusty environment where you're looking to get out of. And I've been using the outdoor shop, the carport, up till that point with all the power tools. And so I just kind of decided that maybe it's not a bad idea to keep the dirty tools, if you may, the dusty ones outside, the ones that are loud and produce a lot of dust, and then keep the indoor shop cleaner and have like a bench and use it mostly for assembly, also use it for, use hand tools. I like to use hand tools sometimes, and then it's really nice to have a nice clean space for that, as well as, you know, other things. I don't look at the shop as just the indoor shop as just a wood shop.
Right.
I have a computer in there. I have a camera overhead where I record a lot of videos. I also just built a tinker table desk, I call it, which is basically a nice desk in the corner where I'm working on setting up more of an electronics area to work with various electronics projects.
Oh, that's so right. Really, you like just got a Raspberry Pi, I saw.
Yes. I'm working on a couple of Raspberry Pi and Arduino projects. I'm working on a project right now where I'm making a soldering fan for basically like a little desktop air purifier that I've been working on the last couple of days now. But I really like the idea of having like an indoor shop that is divided into zones, so you can kind of get more out of it. You know, we all have small spaces to deal with, and we don't always have the luxury of having, you know, a separate room or a shop for each thing we like to do. So, which is why I really like the... but of course, if I had put all my power tools inside the shop, I would have no space for that.
And it would be a big mess. There's sawdust gets everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, right now I just have a drill press inside the inside shop, and I have a CNC machine, the X-Carve. But I have a little shop vac attached to those that I move around, so I can kind of collect the dust. I actually kind of think it's nice too to almost have two environments to work in, because sometimes, you know, you just need to change environment a little bit sometimes, it feels like. So if you're, you know, working on doing a lot of cutting and you're in that, you know, it's dusty, and then it's just kind of nice to go into the separate space, which is cleaner. And the same thing when you've been sitting inside for a while, it's just nice to get out a little bit and do some cutting or some sanding or something like that. So I really do actually appreciate the two shop concept. I really, I mean, this was a kind of a rose from, you know, a space requirements, and I just didn't have that much space to work with. But now I'm thinking, if I ever had the opportunity to build like a larger shop setting, I think I would basically duplicate the environment, maybe on a slightly larger scale, because it's just really nice. You know, most of the time it's nice. Only when it's really raining and cold can it be slightly discouraging to go outside and spend a lot of time cutting. But most of the time it works really well. So it's just one of those things that an unexpected benefit.
Some of that Oregon weather.
Yes, the Oregon weather is, the Oregon summers are beautiful. The fall are usually pretty nice too. But we do get a fair amount of rain in the winter and parts of the fall and spring too. So, but it's pretty mild. But I do get a lot of questions about the shop, and people are concerned with things rusting and rain, wind coming in. And most of the time it's not an issue though. And I wax any metal surfaces that I have outside to protect from rust. And I have a lot of tools that are mainly made with plastic, which also is helpful in an outdoor environment.
There you go.
So, yeah.
I want to learn more about using Arduinos and Raspberry Pi, because there is this idea that a friend of mine, Mike, one of my co-hosts, put in my head of a beehive monitor that's based on an Arduino controller.
Oh, very cool.
Are you using a particular way of learning how are you learning to program the Raspberry Pi?
Before doing this YouTube, in addition to me and my husband, we'd had a computer business for a number of years. So he's a programmer and I do some too. So it's, you know, we are somewhat familiar, or he's very familiar with this concept of programming. But I just think it is something that it's really fun to tinker with. And there, of course, there are a lot of resources online in learning to do these things. But I think that it's just something that if you start with doing very simple things and understanding some principles, then you can build on that rather easily. Not to mention, there are so many other people who are also writing code, and you can often just use other people's Arduino or Raspberry Pi code
that they've posted, so you don't always, an open source repository.
Exactly, that's the whole notion of the Raspberry Pi and the Arduino, is that it is open source. People are really friendly and sharing, and there's a lot of interesting things going on that you can copy someone else's code or part of it or modify it slightly, but you don't always have to start from scratch.
Cool.
It's very cool in that sense. Yeah, there's so many cool things that you can do with it. I really do think that it's really in the beginning stages with the people using that for different things.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, as we wrap up here, what do you have coming down? What's in the pipeline here for your upcoming videos?
Oh, well, I'm in the middle of doing a rather large built-in project that I've been doing three videos so far of building a built-in cabinet and a counter, and I'm just finishing that up with two more videos on that project. So I've just been out cutting drawers, cutting finger joints on the table saw.
Wow.
Yesterday. I cut out 9 drawers, and each of them have a lot of them. So I spent a fair amount of time with my jig lately, and it's been a lot of fun. So
I watched you build the top was out of a piece of maple.
Yes,
that was beautiful.
That was the rough. Yeah, I really like the way that came out too. I was working with a piece of rough sawn maple, or two pieces actually, that were rather large, and then it was a lot of work in bringing those down and cutting them smaller and doing planing them, and then I kind of had a hand like a power planer, and then I turned that upside down and turned it into like a DIY jointer.
That was brilliant, by the way.
Yeah. So, because not everybody, or I usually don't have like a lot of expensive tools around, and, you know, can't always pick that up for a project. So you just have to kind of work with what you have.
Well, I've been watching you build the built-in, which is it basically kind of custom into a wall that you have, and it's going to have shelves, a countertop, mm-hmm. and then drawers.
Right. It's in my office, and I personally really love built-in cabinets, because I think it's awesome when you can utilize the space really well, when you can go all the way up to the ceiling and you can fit something just perfectly, maybe within, this is in between two windows, so you can utilize your space, you know, really well. So that's what I've been working on here now, and I'm making drawers underneath, and then a counter in the middle, and then bookshelves above all the way to the ceiling.
Nice.
And yeah, cool. It's one of those projects that may seem a little intimidating at first, but then when you break it down, each step is quite simple. So you just have to like not get overwhelmed at first.
Yeah, I'm the overwhelmed type. So.
Oh yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for being on. I think people will find your stuff really interesting, and also they can check out your podcast on iTunes.
Yes, iTunes or SoundCloud as well, for if you don't have iPhone or yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it.
All right, well, thank you. So there you go. A big thank you to Lynn for taking some time out of her weekend to talk to us. If you guys want more of our show, we have all the episodes on the gardenfork.tv website. And I think the most recent 100 are on iTunes as well. The 50 or 100 are on iTunes as well. Also, don't forget about our videos. You can watch them on YouTube or on our website as well. Always good to hear from you. Comments or questions are great. We read them on the air. radio@gardenfork.tv is the email address. That's radio@gardenfork.tv. Thank you. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.